Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, an in-depth look at something you may not be aware of. It's called myrtle essential oil. For people who have problems with your thyroid or your ovaries, it helps normalize them. Rosemary is found to boost memory and help prevent Alzheimer's. 13% of U.S. deaths attributed to low vitamin D intake, and a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to do commentaries, my own and others. For example, a major commentary from Global Research's Joachim Hagopian, U.S. Solitary Confinement, the world's largest prison population increasingly comprised of the mentally ill. From Glenn Ford, Kidnapped Girls Become Tools of U.S. Imperial Policy in Africa. This is a unique perspective from Glenn Ford because he's showing us that we're all, of course, opposed to any harm to any woman anywhere in the world. But there's no good side to this. You'll understand once I lay out what's going on. And then also we're going to look at the U.S. military spending compared to the presumed threat of other countries. This is shocking. It's the kind of thing when you look at the chart, you think, wow, why are we spending all this money? We could be spending it on better things. Also today from Roger Bybee, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is another upward transfer of wealth. And then taking on the Federal Reserve. They say the Fed's doing a good job achieving its goals. We're saying it's a criminal organization. Professor Paul Craig Roberts details what they've done, and no one has picked up on it. This will be an interesting insight. And then I'll open it up for calls from anyone in the audience who would like to share your thoughts. Let's begin. We know that we are a nation that eats processed foods. In the process of doing that, we become deficient in essential nutrients. They're simply not in the foods we should be consuming. Vitamin D is one of them. Also, because of severe weather for at least a third to a half of the year, depending upon where you live, people have not been outside enough to get their vitamin D from the sun, which can convert in the skin to the form that we actually utilize. As a result, we have to rely upon our diet. The trouble is most people are eating processed foods, substantially deficient in vitamin D. Hence, the newest study from University of Cambridge and University of Oxford and Harvard School of Public Health all found, after looking at the data, that there's 13% of the people die in America simply because they're deficient in vitamin D. And this was published in the British Medical Journal. And that's really foolish. We shouldn't have anyone dying prematurely because they lack vitamin D. It's so easy to get, and it's so important for you. There's so many good things. It's involved in cellular growth and proliferation. And there's at least 3,000 binding sites for vitamin D receptors throughout the human genome, indicating that vitamin D may regulate up to 3% of the human genome, either directly or indirectly. And also, higher vitamin D concentrations are associated with longer leukocyte telomere length. That's a potential genetic determination of your age, how long you're going to live. So it's just good on all levels. Make sure you get it. From Health Impact News, this is an herb, and it's been used around the world for a long time. It's myrtle, M-Y-R-T-L-E. And it's the essential oil. And why this article is important, because they found that it normalizes the functioning of the thyroid and the ovaries. And what has been used, it's both the berries and the leaves and the fruits have been used extensively as a traditional folk medicine for the treatment of diarrhea and peptic ulcer and hemorrhoids and inflammation, pulmonary and skin conditions. Well, the common myrtle, which is called Myrtus communis, C-O-M-M-U-N-I-S, is native shrub to the Middle East. It grows in all the countries that border the Mediterranean, and Turkey, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and France, and Spain, and Greece, and Italy. And the oil can be extracted from the leaves and the branches, and the oil that is most commonly used medicinally is extracted from the leaves. And this oil is kind of a little greenish-yellow, and its aroma is reminiscent of frankincense or bay. In some examples of myrtle oil have a slight hint of camphor or eucalyptus. And the name myrtle is also used for several other unrelated plants commonly found in the United States. This is not one of them, like creeping myrtle and wax myrtle and crepe myrtle have nothing to do with this. And then they found out, Dr. David Stewart, that it's an adaptogen, just like ginseng is an adaptogen, and it can stimulate an increase or decrease in thyroid activity depending upon a person's condition. And it's been researched by Dr. Daniel Pinol, a medical doctor in France, for normalizing hormonal imbalances of the thyroid and ovaries. It also has benefits for decongesting the respiratory system and your sinuses. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with adaptogen, an adaptogen will increase the functioning of a gland when its functioning is low, or it will lower an overactive gland. The same oil will bring the functioning of the gland to a more normal state in balance, hence homeostasis. So if it's over or under, it normalizes it. That's quite different than pharmaceutical drugs, which will either overdo something or underdo something, and the drugs are far stronger. But it does more. Myrtle oil kills salmonella on fresh fruits and vegetables. In a study, scientists intentionally inoculated fresh tomatoes and iceberg lettuce with an acid-resistant strain of salmonella. Then they used a cleaning solution containing essential oil myrtle to test if it would kill the bacteria. They found that washing with myrtle leaf oil caused a significant reduction in bacteria. And the dilution rate of the myrtle oil was 1 to 1,000. So one part myrtle to 1,000 parts water. So the results suggest that the use of myrtle oil can be an alternative to the use of chlorine or synthetic disinfectants on fruits and vegetables. That's good to know. Now for diabetics, it lowers blood sugar. That's right. The leaves contain an oil that lowers blood sugar, the glucose levels in type 2 diabetics. And that's been used in Turkey for diabetes for a long time. They measured the effects of single and multiple doses of myrtle oil on blood sugar levels of different groups, and it made a difference. And then it was shown to treat malaria, which was traditionally used in Iran for the treatment of malaria. Now, we know that malaria is a parasitic disease of the blood, which is passed to humans by mosquitoes. And it's common in the Middle East and Africa, where it can cause death and serious illness. And the oil of myrtle was shown to reduce the 84% the suppression of the parasitic activity in 4 days of treatment. There's no drug that could do that. It's also a mosquito repellent and had tremendous effects. So that's good. It kills fungus and mold. Just by spraying, it was able to kill Candida albicans and also different species of Aspergillus. So that's good. It heals mouth ulcers, and by spraying it in the mouth. And it also heals warts. Now we know that warts are a contagious skin condition, mainly viral. And a lot of people, when their immune system goes down, they're overworked or they're tired, they have a relapse. And facial warts are particularly difficult to treat. Well, myrtle was an economic, inexpensive way of doing this. And once you apply the myrtle oil on the skin of the body, but not the face, you don't put it on your face, and the results were the elimination of all the warts. And myrtle is also good for hemorrhoids. And there was 6 drops of myrtle oil in a in a 1 gallon and then sprayed. And it also helps helps overall immune system. So one good thing, myrtle. Now rosemary, which is a very common herb, easy to grow, by the way. You can grow it in your backyard or in a planter box in your window. And it's good as an essential oil. It's also good in culinary uses. Well, according to the latest study, it has the ability, its essential oils, to boost memory and to help prevent Alzheimer's disease. The study was done at Miami's Children's Hospital Research Institute, and they studied extracts of rosemary and found that it really made a difference on human brain and nerve cells. And they also found that it inhibited the phosphorylation of the tau tangles, which have been linked with Alzheimer's progression. This took place by halting the production of amyloid protein, which precedes the tangle formation. So that was good. That was done at Japan's Tottori University Medical School. So for Alzheimer's, rosemary as an essential oil. Now, mulberry, I love mulberries, and mulberries are very beneficial. They're messy, and if you dry them, they're delicious. They last forever. I dry things, and I just put it in the freezer, and then they stay forever. Well, heart disease kills about 600,000 people each year, and we know that a lack of exercise and poor diets and exposure to environmental toxins all contribute to this. So then we found out that that little leaf that no one pays attention to, not the fruit, but the leaf, the mulberry leaf, can make a difference. Thailand's major university did a study of this ancient mulberry leaf, and it can lessen arterial inflammation. It can lower both triglycerides and low-density LDL lipoproteins. This was published in Biomed Research International, and it was able to bring down high cholesterol and high triglycerides. And that's a very good thing. Quote, after the 12 weeks, all the patients had lower serum triglycerides and LDL levels. So that's important. And C-reactive protein is also important. Quote, extraction of mulberry leaf powder by hot water exhibited strong antioxidant activity. This research also reveals the tendency of mulberry leaf powder in reducing serum LDL and triglyceride as well as blood vessel inflammation. End quote. So, mulberry leaf extract. And finally, I'm sure that there will be people in the audience who know someone or they themselves have either cancer, herpes, or even HIV. This is the latest. And it's an article about triterpenoids. And these, including the reishi mushroom, R-E-I-S-H-I, mushroom spores, here's what it says. The reishi Ganoderma mushroom contains active substances called triterpenoids in its spores. And studies have linked these triterpenoids to some very powerful healing benefits, including helping those with cancer and even HIV. Often dubbed the king of herbs and called supernatural as a mushroom or the lucky fungus in folklore. It's based upon translations from other cultures. The reishi has been a popular health choice for thousands of years, and it has more than 400 bioactive compounds. It's known to help improve the skin by eliminating dead surface cells, treat those with chronic fatigue disorders, regulate blood sugars, help with altitude sickness, and even Lyme's disease. And now the findings that the triterpenoids have the potential to eliminate the likes of cancer, HIV, and herpes makes it an important point to explore. The North American Journal of Medical Sciences published findings that analyzed these substances after they were isolated from the mushroom spores, saying, quote, triterpenoids isolated from the Ganoderma spores shows significantly anti-HIV-1 protease, anti-tumor, and anti-complement activities. Triterpenoids are the main active constituents of the Ganoderma spores and show various bioactivities for its medicinal use, end quote. Even the world-renowned Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center is on board with the reishi mushroom's ability to be used in cancer. So, that is good news. Finally, on our health issues, I found this interesting. GMOs, genetically modified organism producers, should be punished as terrorists. Russian MP says, quote, a draft law submitted to the Russian parliament, by the way, GMOs are not allowed in Russia or a lot of other countries all over the world, seeks to impose punishment up to criminal prosecution to producers of GMOs harmful to health or the environment. They would be punished as terrorists. Well, that's interesting. We'll see where this goes and what other countries decide to implement something similar. I'm Gary Nall. Today's our commentary day. Just a brief look at some of the upcoming programs right after these messages. Stay with us. Right back. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to be talking about the U.S. solitary confinement, the world's largest prison population increasingly comprised of the mentally ill, from Global Research, and a different look at the kidnapped girls becoming tools of U.S. imperial policy in Africa. We'll show you the back story on that, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, upward transfer of wealth, and a challenge to all that's Federal Reserve. All that coming up, plus your phone calls. Also, let me mention that there is the Millions to March against Monsanto this coming Saturday. This is from Brandon Baker of Echo Watch. Regardless of where you live, May 24th marks the annual opportunity to march against Monsanto. The event protesting GMOs, genetically modified organisms, will simultaneously take place in more than 400 cities in 52 countries, 6 continents. And, quote, historically, Monsanto has brought us DDT, PCBs, Agent Orange, and dioxin. Monsanto's reckless use of chemicals calls into question their testing standards, lack of scientific rigor, disregard for the precautionary principle, and disregard for human life and the ecosystem. And then you'll have to find out where that march is going to be. I'll give you information in a moment. I'll ask Aubrey, our person coordinating it, because I'm going to be one of the keynote speakers there and then marching with everyone. So we want you to come to that. I thought this was interesting. This is from Princeton University, from the Woodrow Wilson School. Quote, and shows how justifications actually creep into people's memories. On this case, they're using the memories of war. This was published in Psychological Science. It's not just war. And then the person then absolves American soldiers of atrocity by altering their memories. Listen carefully to this. Quote, people are motivated to remember information that morally disengages them. How about that? I think that's extremely important. Why? Because how many people in this audience have had people say things, write things, email them, that are not true? They have to justify being a victim. And so they blame you for what they themselves have created. And each time that they say things, no matter how long a period of time has lapsed, they come back to the same arguments, always the same. They're the victims, and you're the responsible person, or others are responsible. They never take responsibility. Now think of how many times we have not, as a nation, taken responsibility for the interventions. I did a whole award-winning series on this, a five-part series about looking at our whole history of intervening in other countries' governments, in their democracy movements by undermining them, funding the Contras, funding kill squads in South America, funding assassinations. We've had people on who are part of that, who came forward as whistleblowers and told about how they would bribe people or kill them. But nowhere in the American psyche today, in the official psyche, do we accept any responsibility for the atrocities we've committed. In the Balkans, we take no responsibility. There's depleted uranium there. There are mines that were sold from the United States there, never cleaned up. We take no responsibility. For Vietnam and the deadly legacy afterwards, no responsibility. In Iraq, Afghanistan, none at all. We didn't even take responsibility for the 900,000 homeless vets and another 900,000 who are sick with Gulf War syndrome and post-traumatic stress disorder. We take no responsibility. So then why, if we institutionally take no responsibility for what we do that's wrong, why should we expect individuals to take responsibility? When was the last time someone came forward and volunteered that their corporation had been engaged in illegal activities, morally reprehensible acts? And that's almost all of the major banks, Wall Street firms, pharmaceutical industry, and all the major bureaucracies in Washington. The people working there every day, they know the games. I had them come to my lectures in Washington for years, the last one being just a year ago when I did a big lecture at the Civic Center, and it was packed, standing room only. And in fact, it was so big they had screens clear across the wall so that people at one end of the auditorium could see what I was doing at the other end. And this was for our PFW audience. And many people came up afterwards and said, yeah, I work in one of those agencies, and you are right. We're inefficient. We have, 15 people doing the work of one, and yet the taxpayer's paying for it. And I said, why don't you blow the whistle? Well, I'm afraid for my job. I said, well, no, there are whistleblower protections, but you got to get the information out. So then bring it down to the personal level. Think how many times people keep repeating something as if the more times they repeat it, then it must be true. No, that's just how we then disengage from being responsible for what we've done to other people. We don't care about that. Let me quote this again. Think about this. Quote, this is from lead author Alan Komen, professor of psychology. People are motivated to remember information that morally disengages them. Hence, they don't care about what acts they have done. And yet, what if we had this standard? In a relationship of any kind, if you dishonor it, it's over. There's no fixing it, it's over. Then how many opportunities would someone get to demean you, disempower you, speak ill of you, betray you? How many would you allow? What would be the number? Because right now, it's endless. Look at Woody Allen. He's still after, 45 years, he's still trying to find a day that he can be happy. And we have a whole three generations accepting this. Well, this is the way life is, and that's it. No, it's not. We shouldn't allow anyone to demean who we are and then expect to stay in our lives. Then it's we who are the problem. But now we at least know better why they're doing it and how they can literally disengage, no matter how mean they are, from their actions. I'd like to share a commentary from Global Research. As of late, we're seeing just a little bit of attention paid in the media to what's happening with prisoners put in solitary confinement. Now imagine this. We have all these facts that have been presented by activist groups, And I believe, personally, that it represents a broken, shameful, and inhumane track record for unfairly meting out both justice as well as punishment in America. And though many amongst us who are not in prison or do not know anyone in prison may take a myopic, out-of-sight, out-of-mind view of such unpleasant and unsettling prison statistics, it is high time for major reform and fundamental change. As human beings, we need to take an honest, hard look at the way our justice system treats those who commit crimes. I'd rather see, I don't know about you, and I'd like your input on this, I'd rather see all nonviolent criminals not go to jail, but instead work in a probationary environment in a setting that helps society. Let them work in gardening and cleaning and fixing in communities, and where they're monitored and they have a chance for rehabilitation. That, to me, makes more sense. And then look at what we do when we put a person in prison. Do we care about whether we're rehabbing them or not? Because the way it is now, nobody really, unless they really try on their own, will get rehabbed. And then we don't want people in our lives once they've been to prison. And that's unfair. For U.S. leaders in a so-called democracy to constantly boast such high principles as justice and equality for all, it's a sham, it's a lie, it's a fraud. It is long past time that they finally start putting their money where their mouth is instead of spouting pious platitudes of lies and hypocrisy. After all, when you have a African-American population of 13%, and yet they represent 50% of the prison population, and a prison population of 2.3 million behind bars, that's 10 times the next nation, and one quarter of all the prison population on the planet, and yet we're only 5% of the population, and yet we have them all in our prisons. Thank goodness a few people are beginning to pay attention to this. Cedric Richmond, a Democrat of Louisiana, brought up the issue in a bill he sponsored called the Solitary Confinement Study and Reform Act. Incarcerating an inmate in a single cell 23 to 24 hours a day with only an hour spent outside the cell without contact with any fellow prison population is simply inhumane and unjustified. And human beings are social animals. They need others in order to both thrive and survive. So depriving people of the opportunity to interact with others for at least brief periods of time is highly detrimental to both physical and psychological well-being. Yet solitary confinement has been a standard punitive weapon historically used in the United States for many years, even centuries, against this nation's civilian as well as military prison populations. And we're not doing anything about it. In recent years, Angola State Prison, Louisiana, has come under intense criticism for its mishandling of the Angola Three, who have spent decades in solitary confinement. Now, what I'm saying here is, the two of the three inmates were convicted in 1972 of allegedly killing a prison guard and were subsequently placed in isolated cells ever since. I mean, totally. They've maintained their innocence throughout, claiming they were blamed because they had opened a chapter of the Black Panthers inside the prison. The third member, who had his conviction for murdering overturned, was released 2001 after 29 years in solitary confinement. And last year, Herman Wallace, just 3 days prior to his death, was freed after 40 straight years in solitary confinement. And Alfred Woodfox, now in his 70s, remains still serving his last 42 years locked up in solitary confinement. So we're not doing anything about this, because we take this assumption that when you are in prison, you're guilty. But it's not true. Not everyone in prison is guilty, not everyone on death row, and many, many, many have been exonerated based upon DNA testing. Getting some financial reward afterwards doesn't make up for the life you can't live again, no matter what money you get. So the thought is, let's reform our entire prison system. Let's stop the for-profit prison part of this whole prison system. We don't need to be doing this and giving all these drug laws purely to keep prisoners there because it makes a corporation, private corporation, profit. It's stupid. From Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Report, title of the article, Kidnapped Girls Become Tools of U.S. Imperial Policy in Africa. I thought this was interesting because I didn't know this. The Boko Haram, like other jihadists, has become more dangerous in post-Qaddafi Africa, thus justifying a larger military presence for the Americans. A chorus of outraged public opinion demands that the international community and the Nigerian military do something about the abduction of Boko of 280 teenage girls. It's difficult to fault the average U.S. consumer of packaged news products for knowing next to nothing about what the Nigerian army has actually been doing to suppress the Muslim fundamentalist rebel groups, as senior columnist Margaret Kimberly pointed out in these pages. The three U.S. broadcast networks carried, quote, not a single television news story about Boko in all of 2013, nor did the misinformation corporations provide a nanosecond of coverage of the bloodshed in the Central African Republic, where thousands died and millions were made homeless by communal fighting over the past year. But that doesn't mean that the Nigerian army hasn't been bombing, strafing, and indiscriminately slaughtering thousands, mainly young men, in the country's most Muslim north. The newly aware U.S. public may or may not be screaming for blood, but rivers of blood have already flowed in the region. Those Americans who read, which presumably includes First Lady Michelle Obama, who took her husband's place on radio last weekend to pledge U.S. help in the hunt for the girls, would have learned in the New York Times of the Army's savage offensive near the Niger border last May and June in the town of Basso. The Nigerian army killed hundreds of young men in traditional Muslim garb without asking who they are. That's according to the New York Times. They don't ask any questions, said the witness who later fled for his life like thousands of others. Quote, when they see young men in traditional robes, they shoot them on the spot, said a student. They catch many of the others and take them away, and we don't hear from them ever again. When they see these young men, you're dead. The Times' Adam Nusseter interviewed many refugees from the Army's all-out land and air campaign to crush Boko Haram insurgency. Quote, all spoke of a climate of terror that had pushed them in the thousands to flee for miles through the harsh and baking semi-desert, sometimes on foot, to Niger. A few blame Boko Haram, a shadowy, rarely glimpsed presence for most residents, for the violence. But the overwhelming majority blamed the military, saying they had fled their country because of the military. Example, in just one village, 200 people, just civilians, no terrorists, were killed by the Nigerian military. In March of this year, fighters who were assumed to be from Boko Haram attacked a barracks and jail in the northern city. Hundreds of prisoners fled. About 200 youths were rounded up and made to lie on the ground. Then, quote, according to the New York Times, the soldiers made some calls, and a few minutes later, they started shooting the people in the back of the, you know, in the head, killing them. I counted 198 people killed at this one checkpoint. All told, according to Amnesty International, more than 600 people were extrajudicially murdered, quote, most of them unarmed, and that's just in that one simple place. Another 950 prisoners were killed and by the Nigerian Military Joint Task Force. Quote, hundreds have been killed in detention, either by shooting them or by suffocating them. There are times when people are brought out on a daily basis and killed. About five people on average are killed nearly on a daily basis. That's just one barracks. And so what we have is we have a snapshot of the Army's response to Boko Haram atrocities that are part of the context of Boko Haram's ghastly behavior. The military has refused the group's offer to exchange the kidnapped girls from prison Boko Haram members. So what this tells me is this. That's from Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Report. It tells me that what this group, this terrorist group, has done, of course, is wrong. But we're not told the story of how our allies have committed as many crimes against innocent civilians with no one being held accountable. And that is the other side of the story. And that's just part of the legacy we bring. And then we have this. I thought this was interesting. The U.S. military spending, which is about $1.5 trillion when all is taken in, and there's a graph I'm looking at, and it shows the United States with this huge spike in what we spend, and then China and Russia, tiny little amounts compared to what we spend on defense. Well, then why are we spending all this? And I've said this before, I'll say it again. This has nothing in the world to do, nothing to do with defending America. This has to do with, because you could do that for $200 billion. This has to do with making sure that the multinational corporations, the private contractors, the former admirals, generals, chief of staff, procurement officers, can go from the government into a very high-paying private corporation and have contracts into the hundreds of millions or billions of dollars indefinitely for work that is not needed at all. And we have not been honest about looking at waste in the government. And we should. And finally, this is from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. Now, some of you may know about financing in the Federal Reserve, and others don't. I believe it should be closed down completely. I believe that the Treasury should be the only institution that actually prints money at zero interest. That would save us almost $600 billion a year. Quote, "The Fed is the great deceiver." That's the title of the article. "Is the Fed tapering? Did the Fed really cut its bond purchases during the three-month period, November 13th through January 2014? Apparently not if foreign holders of treasuries are unloading them. From November 2013 through January 2014, Belgium, with a gross domestic product of $480 billion, purchased $141 billion of U.S. Treasury bonds. Somehow, Belgium came up with enough money to allocate during a three-month period 29% of its entire gross domestic product just to purchase U.S. Treasury bonds. Certainly, Belgium did not have a budget surplus of $141 billion. Was Belgium running a trade surplus during a three-month period equal to 29% of its gross domestic product? No. Belgium's trade and current accounts are in deficit. Did Belgium's central bank print $141 billion worth of euros in order to make the purchase? No. Belgium is a member of the euro system, and its central bank cannot increase the money supply. So where did the $141 billion come from? There's only one source. The money came from the U.S. Federal Reserve, and the purchase was laundered through Belgium in order to hide the fact that actual Federal Reserve bond purchases during November through January 2014 were $112 billion per month. In other words, during those 3 months, there was a sharp rise in bond purchases by the Fed. The Fed's actual bond purchases for those 3 months was $27 billion above the original $85 billion monthly purchase and $47 above the official $65 billion monthly purchase at the time. Remember, we were all told and all the talking heads in the media, oh, happy days are here again. The quantitative easing is tapered to $55 billion per month, and now in May is $45 billion. That's what we were all told. Well, today, right now, I'm telling you, it's all a lie. Why did the Federal Reserve have to purchase so many bonds above the announced amount? And why did the Fed have to launder and hide the purchase? Some country or countries, unknown at the time, for reasons we do not know, dumped $104 billion in treasuries in 1 week. Another curious aspect of the sale and purchase laundered through Belgium is that the sale was not executed and cleared via the Fed's own national book entry system, which was designed to facilitate the sale and ownership transfer of securities for Fed custodial customers. Instead, the foreign owner of the treasuries removed them from the Federal Reserve custodial holdings and sold them through the Euroclear securities clearing system, which is based in Brussels, Belgium. We do not know why or who. We know that there was a withdrawal, a sale, a drop in the Federal Reserve securities held in custody for foreign official international accounts, an inexplicable rise in Belgium's holdings, and then the bonds reappear in the Federal Reserve's custodial accounts. What are the reasons for this deception by the Federal Reserve? The Fed realized that its policies of quantitative easing initiated in order to support the balance sheets of banks too big to fail and to lower the Treasury's borrowing costs was putting pressure on the U.S. dollar's value. Tapering was a way of reassuring holders of dollars and dollar-denominated financial instruments that the Fed was going to reduce and eventually end the printing of new dollars with which it supports financial markets. the image of foreign governments bailing out of treasuries could unsettle the markets that the Fed was attempting to soothe by tapering. A $100 billion sale of U.S. treasuries is a big sale. If the seller was a big holder of treasuries, the sale could signal the bond market that a big holder might be selling treasuries in large chunks. The Fed would want to keep the fact and identity of such a seller secret in order to avoid a stampede out of treasuries. Such a stampede would raise interest rates, collapse U.S. financial markets, and raise the cost of financing U.S. debt. To avoid the rise in interest rates, the Fed would have to accept the risk to the dollar purchasing all the bonds. This would be a no-win situation for the Fed because a large increase in quantitative easing would unsettle the market for U.S. dollars. Washington's power ultimately rests on the dollar as world reserve currency. This privilege, attained at Bretton Woods following World War II, allows the U.S. to pay its bills by issuing debt. The world currency role also gives the U.S. the power to cut countries out of the international payment system and impose sanctions. As impelled as the Fed is to protect the large banks that sit on the board of directors of the New York Fed, the Fed has to protect the dollar. That the Fed believed that it could not buy the bonds outright, but needed to disguise its purchase by laundering it through Belgium, suggests the Fed is concerned that the world is losing confidence in the dollar. If the world loses confidence in the dollar, the cost of living in the United States would rise sharply as the dollar drops in value. Economic hardship and poverty would worsen. Political instability would rise. If the dollar lost substantial value, the dollar would lose its reserve currency status. Washington would not be able to issue new debt or new dollars in order to pay its bills. Its wars and hundreds of overseas military bases could not be financed. The withdrawal from unsustainable empire would begin. The rest of the world would see this as a silver lining in the collapse of international monetary system brought on by the hubris and arrogance of Washington, end quote. What I see is I see China overtaking the United States as the number one world economic power in the next 12 to 24 months. I'm willing to bet it was China that was unloading those, because China has the largest amount of treasuries, bonds. And it's moving towards, right now, a plan to make the ruble and the yuan and other currencies into mixed trading currencies and stop the dollar from being the dollar of choice in the exchange. I believe this will happen within the next 24 months. And I believe that anyone holding mortgages, anyone holding debt is going to be just absolutely wiped out. I also believe that for the middle class, the working class, and the poor class, you're going to see when this happens, you're going to see this add on to the cost of merchandise. You're going to see hyperinflation, and that's going to virtually throw us into the next Great Depression that will dwarf anything we're seeing. This is one of the reasons I'm suggesting people pay attention, because it's these details that mainstream media is not going to dare talk about. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our number. Happy to hear your input now. Let's hear from you. And while you're calling in, let me tell you about five companies that control what you think, from Eric Sommer, Global Research. Quote, heavy distortions and suppressions of information regarding current Ukrainian events are appearing in the U.S. media. You might wonder how so many different news stories could all completely avoid mentioning that the U.S. government is conscientiously supporting two radical far-right parties, including the right sector, which are in control of key positions in the coup-installed new government in the Ukraine. You might also wonder why almost all the U.S. mass media news sources could conceal, with vague phrases like, quote, the sequence of events is not clear, and similar techniques, the role of these extremist organizations in murdering dozens of unarmed civilians in the past few days in southeastern Ukraine. The explanation is surprisingly simple. There aren't numerous U.S. mass media news sources at all. There are just five. Five giant corporations control 90% of U.S. mass media. And direct links connect all five of these media conglomerates to the political establishment and to the economic and political power elites in the United States. These five are Time Warner, Disney, Murdoch's News Corporation, Bertelsmann of Germany, and Viacom, formerly CBS. They control spans of newspapers, magazines, books, radio and television stations, movie studios, and much web news content in the United States. These conglomerates are in large measure responsible for inculcating the social, political, economic, and moral values of both adults and children in the United States. It was not always this way. Immediately after World War II, 3 out of 4 U.S. newspapers were independently owned. But the media-controlled numbers have been shrinking ever since due to mergers, acquisitions, and other processes. By 1983, 50 corporations controlled 90% of U.S. media. Today, just 5 giant conglomerates control 90% of what most Americans read, watch, and listen to. Now, it's notable, and you should understand that all 5 media corporate conglomerates are corporate members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And this organization is a U.S. think tank whose members have been instrumental in formulating U.S. government policies, resulting in sanctions, destabilization efforts, and outright military attacks on nations which have never attacked the United States. The Council on Foreign Relations members, by the way, it was started by David Rockefeller, helped to promote the Iraq War, the bombings of Serbia and Libya, and the recent overthrow of the elected government of the Ukraine. The promotion of these policies by the media conglomerates, which belong to the Council, has been key to preparing America's public to accept these policies. The media conglomerates and fellow members of the Council on Foreign Relations include a large number of the largest corporations, powerful CEOs, and present and former government officials. One prominent member is the former U.S. National Security Advisor, Brzezinski, whose doctrine calling for U.S. control of the Eurasian landmass, which includes Russia and China, is one of the guiding elements of U.S. foreign policy. It should also be noted that conglomerates themselves are giant corporations. They are among the largest companies in the world. They contribute to both the America's big parties, the Republicans and Democrats, while supporting their policies. U.S. media companies have also received from the Reagan, Clinton, Bush, and Obama administrations progressively greater media deregulation, which permitted ever greater media ownership concentration, culminating in the first time in allowing all the media in a community or city to be owned by one company. Pages would be needed to list the thousands of information outlets now controlled by the 5 conglomerates. For example, when you look at Fox, they own the Wall Street Journal, Barron's Weekly, London Times, Far Eastern Economic Reviews, the New York Post, and hundreds of other larger and small city community newspapers, magazines, and internet. Time Warner owns Time Magazine, Fortune Magazine, People Magazine, Sports Illustrated, CNN News, Turner Networks and Movies, Warner Brothers Films, DC Comics. And Disney's not just about Mickey Mouse cartoons. It owns ABC Television, many publishing firms, Disney Films, Lucasfilms, and a huge number of other media. Now let us perform a thought experiment to see how far the conglomerates can go to support government foreign policies. Imagine the U.S. policymakers decided a few years ago that they want to support unelected Ukrainian government no longer serving their interest. They might then announce that this government is undemocratic, is a human rights violator, or that it's failed state and therefore must have a regime change. Well, following suit, the media conglomerates would then sound the alarm. They would discover the reality, which has existed all along, that fascists or extreme right-wing forces are part of the coup-inspired Ukrainian government. There is a history of anti-Semitism, murder of ethnic minorities, and conclude that the U.S. government is right and a humanitarian intervention to remove the government is required. Is this scenario an impossible one? Not at all. It is precisely how the repressive and brutal government of Saddam Hussein, to cite one example, was dealt with. For many years, we praised him as a stalwart ally and sent billions of dollars worth of military aid, and the media conglomerates went along with the ride. Then, in the twinkling of an eye, he was converted by the U.S. government and by the media into a tyrant and ruthless killer, a possessor of weapons of mass destruction aimed at the U.S., and a man whose country must be invaded. Or consider Islamic fundamentalists in Afghanistan. For years, the U.S. government supported them with weapons and training and portrayed them as freedom fighters against their secular socialist government and the Russian occupation. The media, for the most part, went along with this narrative. But then, after 9/11, in the twinkling of an eye, the fundamentalists became in the eyes of the government and the corporate conglomerates, they became the oppressors of women and harborers of terrorism who must be eliminated, and hence invasion. In recent, the U.S. government, unable after 10 years of military occupation to eliminate the Taliban resistance, has again changed course and is seeking negotiations with the Taliban to include them in the Afghan government. And again, the five conglomerates have all changed course exactly in sync with the government. The best advice for anyone seeking to understand current events is to look at the history and realities behind them, and to look at media not controlled by the five conglomerates. That's from Eric Sommer. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to Bill from Georgia. Hi, Bill. Your turn.
Hi, Dr. Knoll. I have a quick question for you regarding antibiotics, natural antibiotics, which would include non-processed honey, colloidal silver, ginger. When taken internally, how are they affecting the probiotic system in the gut?
Depends upon which ones they are. Honey promotes them. Raw organic honey promotes probiotics and prebiotics. And the other essential oils are going to be killing the harmful bacteria, but don't kill the good bacteria.
That would include oregano oil.
It depends upon how much oregano oil you use, because oregano oil is it is caustic, and that's why it's always diluted. But diluted properly, yeah, it will kill a lot of bad bacteria and viruses, but not what is beneficial to the body.
Thank you very much.
All the best to you.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Knoll, and we're out of time, and I want to thank you all for listening and spreading the word. We get analytics every day, so I know who's listening, in which countries and cities, and from home, work, and age groups. And what we're finding is our average listener right now, the average one, representing more than 60% of the total listenership, average age 35. But we have a lot of people in their 20s listening. And they listen at home. They download the program. So I thank you all for sharing that and telling friends to listen in. I'm Gary Knoll. Have a nice day.